This is a production of Cornell University.
Let's get started with the roll call. Kara, if you could.
Okay. Laila Abed El-Majid.
Present.
Dylan Ondicat.
Present.
Morgan Baker.
Present.
Genevieve Bansaw.
Here, thank you.
Katrina Bentley. Kayla Butler.
Excused.
Carlo Castillo.
Excused.
Uchenna Chukwukerev.
Chukwukerev, and I'm here.
Annette Gleiberman.
Here.
Lucy Contreras. Sonu Kapoor.
Present.
Amari Lampert.
Excused.
Andrea Miramontes Serrano. Evan Moy.
Present.
Jocelyn Noriega. Estefania Perez.
Present.
Tomas Revening.
Renning here.
Renning. Kate Santa Cruz.
Here.
Mardia Shardo.
Here.
Lucas Smith.
Present.
Claire Templeman.
Present, sorry.
Valeria Valencia.
Here.
Noah Watson.
Here.
Salem Woldai.
My name is Salam and I'm here.
Thank you, sorry about that. Valentina Shu.
Present.
Johan Yoan.
Here.
Raquel Zohair.
So hard, but I'm here. So,
okay. Lucas Zumpano.
Zumpano, but yeah, what's up, Eric?
Samuel Zevebres.
Excuse.
And Catherine Wong.
Here. Can we get the count of members present?
I have 24.
Perfect. Thank you. Okay. The time is 4:51. I'm going to call the meeting to order. We have 24 members present. Let's go ahead and move to our agenda. Does anyone have any announcements you would like to add? I'll let Noah take over from here. Noah, I have an announcement if no one else does.
Yeah, Kat, have at it.
Please. Okay, awesome. I just see a hand from Johan. So I'll start off. Tomorrow, there is a very cool event happening that I'd like to let you all know about. It's hosted by the Cornell Asia Pacific Student Union. If any of you know the Netflix show Umbrella Academy, one of the actors is coming to speak at Cornell tomorrow. It'll be a virtual event. Check out the CAPSU social media for the Zoom link registration. Thank you.
And then Johan?
Hi, it's not really an announcement, more like a question. I'm wondering, so I know the election day will be next week, Tuesday, but just wondering, will there be any post-election debrief hosted by SA? Because I know for a lot of, you know, international students, one thing that concerned them the most is, you know, the change of immigration policy brought by, you know, the new presidency. So I'm just wondering if there's, you know, event like this.
That's a great question, Johan. Right now, we don't have anything planned, but I do know that the Dean of Students Office has been planning a couple of post-election debrief events hosted through various centers. So, for instance, Office of Global Learning and 626, all of the centers within 626. So I'd encourage you to reach out to those. If you have ideas for something that we should host, please feel free to voice them. You can message me privately at Slack or in the general Slack channel as well. And for folks, if you have an announcement, feel free to like raise your hand in the chat.
And then Layla?
Yeah, I just wanted to remind everyone that if you're going to miss a meeting or be late or have to leave early, to email me instead of using other like forms of communication. It's just easier to keep track of. Thanks.
Andrea? You're muted, Andrea. Or at least we can't hear you. Yeah. Okay, Raquel, I'm gonna let you go first.
Thanks. Just really quickly, a few people have brought to my attention that they're trying to access the Zoom recordings on the Office of Assembly's website, and they're unable to. I guess they're not posted yet. So I just wanted to check in and see if they were going to be posted soon.
Okay, so this is Wendy from the Office of the Assemblies. Are you talking about the audio recordings?
Yes.
Because we only upload the audio recordings.
Yeah, so the audio recordings.
Okay, so we are actually already all up to date. So I don't know specifically which meeting you might be looking for, but all of the audio recordings from this semester have been uploaded. If they haven't, we will work on that and get it done by tomorrow. The thing is that we run into, because I'm working remotely, and so is half of our student staff, and so is Gina. So the three students who are working or on campus and have access to EduRoom, they're being tasked with uploading this stuff. But yeah, we'll get it. We'll make sure that they're uploaded for you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to announce real quickly that I'm going to be meeting the head of the dining department, and I'd like if anyone has any complaints or comments that they'd like to bring up, I'm going to be talking to him. So I would really appreciate it if you guys I don't know if there's anything you guys want to get across, I'm going to have a meeting with it. So yeah.
Awesome. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And with that, if we have no more announcements, we're going to move into open microphone. So if any member of the community wishes to speak right now, actually, wait, can I just jump something on the
You're okay. I think we have Colin's presentation next.
Yeah, sorry.
But if you want to do open microphone first, Colin, is that all right with you?
Yeah, that's what I was going to suggest.
Sure.
Okay, yeah. So if any members of the community wish to speak, please raise your hand and we will unmute you. And seeing no hands, I'm going to close open microphone and give it away to Colin.
I would actually prefer, I don't know if this is possible, but if you guys could switch around the order of the items on the agenda and put my presentation last and couple it with the two resolutions. I think that would make the most sense as far as keeping the information together for everyone.
Sure. So just to clarify, you would like a motion to amend the agenda for today so that your presentation, along with your two resolutions, comes last in the agenda, also below the statement for in remembrance of Antonio Salas?
Yes, after the statement.
Okay. Is there a motion to amend the agenda?
Motion to amend the agenda.
Is there a second?
Second.
Awesome. Okay. All in favor of amending the agenda, please vote in the chat. I see a hand. Is that a question, Lucy? Or, oh, wait, it's okay. Yeah, vote with the yes buttons. waiting on 1, 2, 3, 4 more votes. And if you're voting no, feel free to hit the no button. And if you're abstaining, you can message me privately. Okay, I'm gonna close voting in about 15 seconds. And again, please vote in the participants chat, folks. I see some people haven't voted yet. Okay, great. Let me check the vote count. Okay, sorry, just checking it again. Perfect, 25-0-1, the motion to amend the agenda has passed. So we're gonna go ahead and move on with the statement for Antonio Silas. So have folks gotten a chance to read through the statement? Give me a thumbs up. Okay. Great. I'm going to go ahead and introduce it really quickly. And then we can go ahead and just vote on it. This is not like a resolution. This is not a formal legislative action, but it is an action that the assembly can still take. So I'm just going to, at the end of this, ask for a motion to approve of this statement. So earlier this week was the 1 year anniversary of when the Cornell community found Antonio's body last year. Antonio was a freshman in the College of Arts and Sciences. He had only been enrolled for a few months when his body was found. It's been determined that his death was related to an unsanctioned fraternity events. And since then, there have been a range of reforms to the Greek life system ever since then. Basically, this statement would express the assembly's support for his family during this time. I know that they're still throughout the grieving process, and they're also in the middle of a lawsuit against Cornell University. I think it's important that we, as an assembly, express that we support his family and also support transparency surrounding his case. Cornell University has not released any new information about his case or like any parties involved. We understand that due to legal difficulties that might not be possible, but we'd also like to express that we would still appreciate support for the students who were hurt by this loss. That's basically what the statement says. I'm happy to take any questions about this statement. Otherwise, okay, I see one hand. Zimpana, go ahead.
Oh yeah, I was just gonna ask, does this statement include does it include Greek life, and how so?
I would encourage you to read the statement. It's available in our agenda, which is sent out every day. So I would direct you to our second paragraph. It says, a year has passed since the Cornell community lost a beloved student, friend, and son. In that time, his death has been determined to be in relation with unsanctioned fraternity events, spiking reforms to our Greek life system and university culture. So that's where Greek life is mentioned.
Thank you.
Yep, you're welcome. Any other questions? I would also like to bring attention to a fundraiser that has been started by his club soccer team, Mundial. I think there's information on our social media, and I can also send information about how you can support their fundraiser in honor of Antonio after this meeting. Great. Any other questions? Comments? All right. Is there a motion to approve of this statement?
Motion to approve.
Is there a second?
Seconded.
Second.
Thank you all. Let's go ahead and vote on approving this statement.
Is there maybe we can just have 2 minutes just reading over the statement again?
Oh, sure. Technically, because we already voted, we already moved into voting no, but.
Could we just start it? Yeah, I mean. Just
okay. I'll put a pause on the voting. I'll leave voting open for 2 minutes then, and then I'll just allow people to read it if you haven't already. You should be trying to read things before the meeting, but I know that things come in late and everyone's busy, so just keep in mind for future meetings. Okay, I'm going to allow people to read, and then I'm going to close voting at around 5:04.
Out of respect for everyone's time, I think we should motion to vote. So I'm making a motion to vote.
Okay. Second.
Thank you, Tomas. There's been a second. We're just going to move into voting. So again, if you haven't already voted, please vote now. I see most people have. Thank you, Tomas, for that motion. I appreciate it. Okay. Okay, please vote if you haven't already. And if you're not voting, I'm going to assume that's an abstention. Okay. 24-0-2, this statement has been approved. Thank you all. I got a reminder from Kate that we haven't approved last week's meeting minutes. Shall we do that? Okay, great. Has everyone had a chance to read through the meeting minutes? Again, I know people are really busy right now. I would like to remind people that if you can, you should be reading all the meeting materials before every meeting so we don't have to spend time reviewing the materials. Okay. Has everyone got a chance to read the meeting minutes? Okay, is there any motions?
Motion to vote.
Second.
Okay, thank you. Please go ahead and vote on approving the minutes from last week's meeting. And if you're going to abstain, please just message me privately. We're going to close voting in 20 seconds. Okay. Great. If you're not going to, okay. Again, if you're not voting, if you're going to abstain, please message me privately. Otherwise, I see with a vote of 22-0-4, I believe, the meeting minutes pass. Okay, great. So we're going to move into the rest of the agenda. Am I missing anything, guys? Okay. Shall we move into resolution number 9, as that is coming before Colin's presentation? Okay, great. So I am one of the sponsors of this resolution, so I'm going to go ahead and ask Noah to chair right now while we're discussing this resolution, as I'm a sponsor of this piece. Okay, so great. Thanks, Noah. Yep.
So if you would like to introduce your resolution. One of the co-sponsors.
Yes. All right. Hi, people. So I'm one of the co-sponsors of resolution number 9. So resolution number 9 stems from the fact that if you go through and read, on October 11th, there was a peaceful protest by members of CARS, the Cornell Abolitionist Revolutionary Society, in downtown or outside of the Ithaca Police Department. Which, you know, that protest quickly ended up being escalated and turning violent because police officers, Ithaca police, escalated the situation, violently arrested some of the protesters, and, you know, were also making very transphobic, purposefully misgendering some of the protesters at. Yes, and I'm also going to let some of the other co-sponsors speak as well, but purposefully, misgendering and, you know, making transphobic remarks to some of the protesters. I think one of the biggest things that, we've been seeing in the past, 6 months now is like police brutality, issues with policing is at an all-time high within our country. It's always been like this. Policing is rooted in racism and slavery. I outline it a little bit in the beginning of the resolution, but this resolution is basically calling for Cornell to sever any ties that they have with the Ithaca Police Department because policing and inherently is oppressive to Black and Indigenous people of color, people who are part of the LGBTQ+ community, people who have low, who are of low SES, you know, people who are immigrants, things of that nature, people who are within marginalized communities. And I'm thinking if, you know, if Cornell is supposed to be upholding its motto of any person, any study, as well as all of its other values, we really need to start taking a look at how state of policing as a whole, not only within the Ithaca community, we also see UPD, which is also going to be a separate conversation. We really need to start taking a look at how they're actually doing what they're doing. I'm also going to defer my time to Tomas so that he can give some context around some other things in this resolution as well.
Yeah, so I just want to clarify that for the events of October 11th. So originally the protests were happening farther downtown and a Blue Lives Matter protester went up to one of the cars protesters and threatened him with a knife. The police got involved and arrested the man who was threatened, who was a Black man. So because of that, that's why the cars protesters then went to Ithaca Police Department to protest his unfair arrest, which, mind you, they did not arrest the man with a knife who was threatening people. And it was caught on video that he was telling people to go die and then threatening them. And so they then proceeded to arrest one of the leaders, Jen, who is an openly trans woman and a pretty big figure in the community, and who has had conversations with the chief of police. And the chief of police on video admitted to knowing who she is and knowing that her name is Jen, and yet continued to purposefully misgender her, which is in and of itself like an act of violence, aside from all the other acts of violence. And then when people were protesting again, because neither of these protesters were read their Miranda rights, they threw pepper spray at protesters, some of whom were minors from the Ithaca community. So that was just more context I was giving.
If I could also defer some time to Salam, as I was also going to make an amendment. She's supposed to be one of the co-sponsors of this resolution. She was also at the protest as well. So I don't know if that's allowed, Kat, or...
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Feel free.
Hi, okay, yeah. So the 10/11 protest everyone was talking about, I was there. Luckily, I left like literally like 2 minutes before they started pepper spraying and mass arresting everybody. But it was downright disgusting, the events that happened. And I was like, I've never been as scared as I was in that moment. Because I have been to multiple protests, like especially over the summer. Like, I wasn't really afraid of the police until that precise moment. Being the only black girl in that crowd, it was definitely terrifying. The way that they were treating us was insane. Everyone was just sitting outside the Ithaca Police Department with their posters, sitting, protesting peacefully. Not like there wasn't no commotion. Just everyone demanding to release the students, to just pretty much give the respect that we deserve. And we saw like the police officers, they were sitting on top of the buildings, they were mocking us. It was insane. And it's just disgusting, the fact that, in my opinion, that Cornell hasn't even acknowledged this yet, and we should sever all ties with Ithaca Police Department.
Uche, is that all?
Yeah, if any of the other co-sponsors want to speak, feel free to, but if not, we can start taking questions.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for presenting this. I really appreciate the resolution you guys brought forward. And with that, we're going to start a speakers list. I already see a few names on there. And with that, I will first ask Johan for his question.
Hi. Thank you guys for the resolution. My question is, when you say you want Cornell like stop all the ties with Ithaca Police, what ties are you talking about? Like, what kind of, I guess, relationship does Cornell have with Ithaca Police? That's just like a point of information, I guess.
Do any of the co-sponsors, I can answer this, but do any of the other co-sponsors want to answer? So Cornell has the relationship with IPD in like two distinct ways from what I've seen so far. Is one, CUBD, they're deputy sheriffs of like the Ithaca Police Department. So they're deputized by IPD. Then on top of that, Cornell has a relationship where, you know, if there's ever any like extra backup that they need, like they automatically call in IPD, or vice versa. If IPD ever needs like any extra help, they call in CUPD, which is what also happened at the protest on 10/11. So there's that main relationship right there.
And then Dylan.
Hi, thank you. First off, yeah, thanks for bringing the resolution up for debate stuff. It's obviously a very pressing issue. And also, sorry to anyone, like Salama, you talked about being there and feeling scared. Sorry that that happened. I just have a couple of questions. I've been reading a few articles on this, and I'm looking at the Cornell Sun right now. And from what I'm reading, it seems to be a very different version of events to some of the things some of the assembly members are saying. You know, I'm reading, for example, that protesters outside the Ithaca Police Department went onto the premises and were banging on the doors and things. Were saying that they were just sitting there and it was unwarranted arrests and things. So I just firstly want to know if there's any like hard evidence we can like see as an assembly before we debate this further or vote on this, because I personally like to make decisions on like the evidence and facts I can get hold of. My second question is, we talk about severing ties with IPD in the sense that when something happens on the Cornell campus, you call IPD for backup. There will be times where things happen where you do need backup. And if we're trying to weaken the police force, both in Ithaca and on campus, do the members proposing this have a solution as to what the alternative is? Because of course, there are going to be times where you do need police force to take care of something when something goes wrong.
Okay, so first of all, we have evidence right here. We just had an SA member recount her experience as she went to the actual protest. So I don't understand why her account is not believable. It's low-key kind of disrespectful in my opinion. And also on top of that, the Cornell Sun doesn't always report things correctly. So I think it's really good that, you know, you tried to read up on something, but you also weren't there. So we had actual SA members. I have close friends. We have people who from CARS, the Cornell Abolitionist Revolutionary Society. We have video evidence. Someone's going to be linking the videos at some point in time, but there is evidence. This would not be coming forth if there wasn't evidence, or if this wasn't an issue, or if nothing ever happened. So, I think that to answer that first question, I don't know if any of the other co-sponsors want to hop in and like, you know, add some more context or say anything extra. But yeah, I think that, you know, going just solely off of what the Cornell Sun said just isn't a good metric in my opinion. You know, journalism, people spin things around. So I think it's really good to actually do deeper digging than just reading a Sun article. Number two, I think that another thing you have to understand with policing is there are plenty of other like community-led solutions rather than having armed police officers walking around on campus. Again, this is going to be a conversation in the upcoming weeks. There's going to be a presentation next week, as well as other resolutions coming in the further weeks that will talk more and discuss more about this. But I think the biggest thing that we all have to understand is that there are too many situations that have happened here on campus that did not need to involve armed police officers intervening. I've had too many conversations with employees some faculty students who have told me that they've done a better job at de-escalating situations where CUPD should have been, or not CUPD, but IPD, CUPD police should have been de-escalating. They were escalating the situations. And I think, you know, we can even look at specific examples where, like, if a student's having a mental health crisis, which has happened before, and then IPD is called, IPD, CUPD is called, what sense does it make to have armed police officers coming in and trying to address and handle that situation? So I think it's really important that, you know, moving forward that, you know, we really stay connected with our constituency, especially our marginalized groups on campus, and really get a better understanding of how policing actually works and who they're actually protecting.
And jumping in on that, I wanted to say, I didn't think it was necessary for me to go into details about what happened, because regardless of what occurred, it was still downright disgusting that they were mass arresting us, peppering, spraying us, and treating us like we weren't peaceful protesters. And yes, it was peaceful protesting. I didn't think it was necessary for me to go into details, because I thought, because of the fact that I'm speaking here right now as a witness, it wasn't necessary. But okay, the banging on the doors, it wasn't banging as whatever you're assuming. It was, we were chanting, and in the chant, we were trying to get a rhythm going on. So with the rhythm going on, it was like banging against the wall. It wasn't any far, at the end of the day, it was still peaceful. Regardless of what occurred, it was still peaceful. It wasn't anything, whatever the media portrayed as well, media is also really known not to be accountable. So I don't think that videos, recordings are necessary, but if so, it was dropped in the chat.
Okay, can I get a
point. Kat has a point of order.
Yes. Okay. So just a reminder, I'm not chairing right now as I'm a co-sponsor of this resolution. So Noah is the chair. So if you have something that you would like to raise, so if you have a point of information, a point of order, or point of privilege, put it in the chat. Otherwise, don't message me, because I can't do anything, so I'm not chairing right now. Second of all, yes, everything is in the chat, like in the chat on the right. But also, Wendy has just reminded me that what is said in the chat is not part of the public record, and technically shouldn't be allowed, because this wouldn't happen if it was an in-person meeting. But obviously, we need some way to send the links through. So I think it's okay if we keep sending the links. Just to remind, if you do have something to say, please put your hand up. Okay, I'm going to go back to not sharing.
So can we allow Mariah to speak, since she's one of the co-sponsors?
Of course.
Yeah, I was just, can I go?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say that I think it's incredibly disrespectful to be discrediting people's lived experiences, and I think to say that you've done quote-unquote research by looking at a Sun article in order to discredit Salaam was not only disrespectful, but actually quite violent. And I would urge you to think before you speak, especially when discrediting Black people and especially Black women's accounts of like what happened. The Sun is a newspaper. The Sun is not, the Sun is not a personal account. The Sun is reporting on like what they perceive to be the truth. And that doesn't mean that it is the truth. And that doesn't mean that it can't ever contradict other people's experiences.
Can Tomas go next as one of the co-sponsors?
Yes.
I also just want to fight against the notion that protesters owe you peace in order to not be subject to violence by the police. Even if, you know, it was actual banging on the walls, right? Like not how Salaam just clarified, that doesn't excuse militarized police enacting violence against citizens that they're supposed to protect. That does not excuse the misgendering, the purposeful misgendering of a trans woman by the chief of police, right? Like, I don't care what the protesters did at the end of the day, because like a building is a building. If they were banging on the walls, I don't, like, it's a building, it's an inanimate object. That doesn't excuse committing violence against living bodies that supposedly you are supposed to serve and protect. So I think, one, like, disrespectful to discredit what like someone who was there was saying, and the marginalized voices who are co-sponsoring this proposal are saying in the first place. But even if like people were banging on walls, that doesn't excuse arresting protesters when there's video evidence of said protesters being threatened with a knife by another person, yet you don't arrest that person, and conveniently that person is the white person in the conflict. Two, when you purposefully misgender a trans person. Three, when you throw pepper spray at minors. Four, not reading them their Miranda rights as you arrest them, et cetera, et cetera. So I think at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what they were doing, because either way, like, police were violating people's rights, and it's the job of the police to be able to de-escalate the situation. And if they are incapable of doing that, they do not belong on our campus.
Thank you, Tomas, and thank you for everybody who responded. I am now going to give Dylan 20 seconds to respond briefly so we can go on to the next person in the speakers list.
Let me just start by saying that this is a very sensitive matter, and I think, you know, people getting aggressive and jumping on each other in this debate probably isn't the best way to approach it. Second off, I'm by no means trying to discredit the accounts of the members of the assembly. I'm not saying that my research is overrides their experiences. What I'm saying is, this is the first time hearing of this, and from what I understood before, this is very different clarification and evidence, so that we can all base our judgments more clearly with more points of view to understand. This is the first time hearing of it, and I'm completely open to hearing it and like looking into it even further and trying to establish what actually happened.
Thank you, Dylan. With that, I just want to clarify some rules going forward with the speakers list. So we are going to give the person asking their question around 30 seconds. And then out of respect for the co-sponsors, we will allot them up to, or I guess we should say we should give the people asking the questions 1 minute, I'm sorry. And then up to 5 minutes for a response, because we do have a lot of co-sponsors on this. And then we won't be having the question asker responding, because if they want to respond, they can go on the second speaker's list. So with that, I will ask Claire to ask her question. You have 1 minute.
Hi, this is not going to be as intense as the last question. So in the wording of the resolution, you simply use the word absolve. However, just from my understanding, that means to like absolve of guilt, or like to release someone from a crime, which I feel like is the incorrect sentiment in this resolution. I feel like it's the opposite of what we should be doing. I believe like something like dissolve is more accurate, but again, I could be wrong.
Actually, as an English major, I will agree that that's a more accurate word.
As a co-sponsor, can I motion to amend line 69 to change it from Cornell must immediately absolve to Cornell must immediately dissolve?
Yes, thank you, Kat. Can I get a second for that?
Second.
And then is there any dissent? Nope, seeing no dissent, please vote in the participants chat window. I'm going to give you guys 15 seconds to do that. Okay. 10 more seconds, please. please vote in the chat window. I want to respect everybody's time. This is
just a vote on the amendment to change the wording from absolve to dissolve, and then I just have a point of order once voting is over.
Okay. Okay, and by a vote of 20 to 2 to... So 20 to 2 to... four, I believe. The amendment has been approved. And Kat, please go ahead with your point of order.
Thank you, Noah. According to Robert's rules, I would like to refer to Dylan's comment where he called some folks aggressive for responding to his comment. I'd like to say that we shouldn't be doing that, first of all, because it is a racially coded kind of language. I think people often refer to Black folks as aggressive when they wouldn't say that, use that same language when talking to white people. Also, just because responding specifically within the Robert's Rules of Order, please avoid ad hominem attacks. So for instance, using the word aggressive to describe another member of the assembly, ad hominem, we try not to do that according to Robert's Rules of Orders. It was pretty inappropriate. I just wanted to mention that.
Can I clarify?
Thank you, Kat. Dylan, do you have a point of order or point of information?
Point of information.
Oh, what is it?
My point of information is that it was not, the term aggressive was not used to describe any specific assembly member.
Okay, with that, I think we're going to move on the speakers list. Lucas, I think you're the only one with your hand up at this point.
Yeah. I also first want to acknowledge that when we like vote yes and no, that kind of clears out the hands and stuff. So for the future, if we do a mid thing, a mid speakers list vote, we might have to consider that. That's a separate thing. I also have something else, but yeah, just to acknowledge that we kind of lost our speakers list. So yeah, now I just kind of want to speak as the director of local relations for our Office of Student Government Relations. And first off, thank you to the speakers for bringing this resolution. Certainly, it's in need of addressing. It's, you know, long overdue. I think we've certainly seen digressions across the country and in Ithaca. This isn't the first case of incidents of officers not living up to the code and what they pledged to do. So I also am interested, after talking a little bit with Uche or just floating an idea of putting a little bit more specific of an ask on administration for this and actually tasking the Office of Student Government Relations to work with the Office of Community Relations, Cornell University's Office of University Relations, to kind of look into law enforcement relationships that the university has. Sorry, I don't know if you're trying to flag me for time, but yeah, that was my essential thing. So opening that up for comment, I guess, but that's my point.
Thank you, Lucas. And then the co-sponsors have about 5 minutes to respond. So go ahead.
I know, Lucas, you mentioned this to me on the side, but I'm like the other co-sponsors. Do y'all have any like comments or like suggestions? Like, what do y'all think?
And I guess, sorry to butt in. So my intention here as well is also addressing this call for some more for evidence per se. It isn't necessarily evidence to precede this resolution, but allows us as an assembly to be informed as we go forward, so we can look more in depth at some of these relations and potentially explore also the ask that we have some different alternatives to community policing, or not policing, but community conflict resolution, specifically through some meetings we've had this semester, Community Dispute Resolution Center in Ithaca. So kind of tasking our office to do that. That's a resolution, I guess, I'm interested in if the co-sponsors would entertain it.
I don't know if that's a separate resolution. I do think like a step towards that is when we look at the way we handle on-campus incidents, and this has been talked about among RAs, and I think this would be a good time to talk to reach out to RAs on campus about this, but no longer relying on CUPD for so many like incidents. Like every time there's a drinking on campus, like we need to call CUPD, or there's a mental health crisis, they call CUPD. Like, if someone's having a mental health crisis, like bringing law enforcement in, who, you know, makes them feel like they're in trouble and is possessing weapons, is like not the best way to handle that situation. So I think, you know, when we're thinking about like our freshmen and our sophomores, especially who are usually living in on-campus housing, and like how that affects their experience on campus and their feeling of safety on campus, like that's one of the ways that we could improve like alternatives to policing on campus. I don't know if that really answers your question, but yeah.
And thank you, Tomas, and everybody who responded, and Lucas for the question. We're going to go on to Evan. I just want to remind everybody, 1 minute for your question, please. And yeah, Evan, please go.
Yeah, thank you to the sponsors for this resolution. I agree with the ideas behind it, that structural institutional violence are prevalent within the police system, and they need to be addressed explicitly by the university. And also going off with what Uche said, community-led public safety initiatives would be strictly better than the current system. The one worry I have about it, though, is that I worry about the response from the university administration and the efficacy of such a resolution abolishing the ties to Ithaca Police without having this other structure of community-led public safety in place. So, like, why are we abolishing it first without having this system already?
First, I just want to remind people, like, abolishing IPD, unfortunately, or, like, abolishing our ties to IPD, unfortunately, does not abolish CUPD. Like, CUPD still exists, like, which is what we use for most of our calls anyways on campus. In terms of whether or not those things exist. I actually do think they exist on campus. They are just underfunded and underutilized. Right, like as someone who used to be an RA, and now I quit, so I can say this. There were times when I was supposed to call CUPD for things that I chose to handle in a way that was safer for my community. And that ended up with better mental health for my residents, better relationships with my residents, better overall health of my community. So I don't think that those systems are not already in place. It's that like these support structures exist in the form of RAs, in the form of WADI, in the form of CAPS, sort of, in the form of EARS, right? Like other things like that, that are just underfunded and underutilized. And too often the first instinct is to call CUPD. So I think it's just about using what already exists and funding those things better and utilizing them better. And I think at the end of the day, like IPD isn't doing any of those things anyways. So why do we, like, they're just violent and racist and transphobic. So they're not doing anything for the community anyways.
Thank you, Tomas. And thank you, Evan, for the question. Next on the first speakers list is Samuel.
Yeah, so I totally agree with the resolution to divest from police in general and cut ties with Ithaca PD, but I definitely want to think about, for example, other groups that are maybe nonviolent or like are professionals in combating specific situations. Like, for example, when Cornell students call the police for a nonviolent call, we shouldn't have police that are armed coming to that dispute, which is what we were talked about before. So are we going to look into resolutions that look into funding and putting into, I guess, the infrastructure professionals that are able to back up CUPD and eventually just in general come to these kinds of calls to add to this resolution?
Yes, Stephanie, did you want to say something?
I'm not sure if I really caught all that, but I don't think it's necessarily our job as the student assembly from a university to tell the Ithaca Police Department how to reform itself. So I don't really see where that would be coming from on that end.
And
can I respond?
I think, like I said earlier, that work is being done on campus currently. And like, there are groups on campus working towards that, right? Like Do Better Cornell, Cornell for Black Lives are groups that are already doing these things. And if you're interested in that, you should definitely take it upon yourself to reach out to those groups and take direction from them on how, you know, you as a student representative on student government can represent them in those interests. But that work is definitely being done on campus. I don't think there is enough space in this resolution to do that. Like talking about that, like that would be a resolution that, again, you need to do significant research on, and, you know, like put a lot of time into writing it. I do think like we need to kind of stop, like, pull away from trying to add everything into a resolution. Like, that's why you have specific resolutions. You don't need to get everything done at once. It's more important that you do small things right. And, you know, if we wait a couple more weeks to do it, to get that resolution in, if that's what you want, then that's better than trying to just tack it on to this resolution.
Can I ask a follow-up question?
We're going to ask that you raise your hand and be put on the second speaker's list.
Okay. Can Kat respond to one of Sam's points?
Yeah, you guys have 55 seconds left. So yeah, Kat.
I can do that. Thanks. Samuel, I really appreciate your question. I think I would like to say that I think the heart of what you're asking is addressed in the resolution in line 72. I think that by asking Cornell to put pressure, using its position and influence within Tompkins County for greater community oversight over IPD, I think the intent of that line is that it will apply pressure for them to work on reforms. Like, the whole point of Cornell and this resolution is that we're withdrawing our support, hopefully to instigate greater change.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Sam, for your question. And thank you, all the co-sponsors, for responding.
Thank you.
And with that, we're going to move into the second speakers list. If anybody who hasn't spoken yet would still wish to speak, raise your hand and you will have priority over the second speakers list. But we're going to move into it, seeing that there are no questions. And Johan.
Hi. Thank you guys again for the resolution. But I guess just some point information to offer. So according to Uche, there are two ways Cornell is kind of linked with IPD. The first is the deputy chief is appointed by the Ithaca Police Department, if my understanding is correct. The second one is that if there's a need for manpower on Cornell CUPD district, they will call IPD immediately. But I believe this resolution wouldn't really help to dissolve this type of relationship. But here's why. If the IPD is the department appointing the deputy chief for CUPD, then maybe we can have some discussion over changing the procedure to change that. But for the manpower, though, that's a totally different topic, because that thing, I believe, is set by Tompkins Homeland Security Department. It's not necessarily Cornell's admin or even us, our call to say, you know, we don't need IPD on our campus when there are, you know, future manpower call. Second of all, on calling CUPD for nonviolent incidents on campus, I believe I believe could be changed by just changing the protocols in general. Because I believe, for example, for a mental health call, the reason people or the dispatch send police first is in traditional places, they want the police to secure the scene before all the EMTs and paramedics be present. Mm-hmm. But sorry, just like one last sentence. But in Cornell campus, there's not a problem with safety, probably, because I mean, students shouldn't have weapons in their dorm, so there shouldn't be a threat to anyone. So I believe by changing the protocols, we may, I guess, reduce the CUPD's presence in mental health calls, stuff like that. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay, co-sponsors, 5 minutes.
One thing, I do want to fight against the notion that there's ever a reason for police for mental health calls in any situation. They usually just escalate the situation. But anyways, thank you for your input. We will have to respectfully disagree. Can we get the next speaker, please?
Yep. Thank you guys both for your questions and answers. And the last person on our speakers list is Sam.
Yeah, so my follow-up question was just, do we think there's a possibility if we don't have these groups that we're talking about working on in a future resolution and maybe working along with campus groups, that if we pass this resolution and start to, I guess, lose ties with the IPD, will there be a gap in our ability to respond to events on campus without having the necessary, I guess, like filler groups ready when we pass this resolution?
Just to clarify, so your question is, if we move forward with this resolution, dissolve relationship with IPD, what are we going to do with events on campus when we do need public safety things? Is that your question?
Yeah, somewhat.
Okay. Please correct me if I misinterpret it. I think going back to what Tomas said earlier, IPD is different from CPD. So if we are encountering events on campus, CPD will still be around. This is specific to IPD. Further conversations will probably be had about CPD. But in the meantime, campus issues, CPD is still around.
Right.
And can I jump into?
Sorry, I was just thinking about when Uche said how our ties with IPD lie with when we need, I guess, backup or help from a larger department. So that's why I was asking if we're in that kind of situation and we don't have like a replacement for that, is there an opportunity that we would need something else that we don't have yet?
Mariah, did you want to respond?
Yeah, I can kind of say that, like, if that's the case, then, like, Cornell should come up with something better, right? Like, it's not our responsibility as abolitionists to, like, always have the solution to, like, what is the replacement. I kind of bring up the parallel similarly with slavery is that it's, like, a lot, like, people were relying on slave labor, right, at the time, and it's, like, the question of what do we do now that we don't have slavery is not really up to, like, an abolitionist. Like, slavery should be abolished regardless of whether or not there's an alternative in the works. And so that's kind of where we're at right now, is that it's like we want to sever this tie, and if CUPD needs backup and they can't rely on IPD, then they'll figure something out. Like they'll have to come up with a solution, but that's not really on us.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. It's a really good point. Thank you.
Yeah, I guess we're gonna have Johan ask one last question.
Sorry, it's not a really good question. It's more like point of information. Just to clarify, so I believe what's going to happen is, let's say there's not an incident, let's just say there's a mass casualty incident on campus. What's going to happen is the dispatch will automatically assign IPD as a mutual aid to COPD's district to come in here to do whatever help they want. So I believe when we are talking about, say, oh, we don't have the backup, we're not talking about, you know, incident planning, which is, you know, because, you know, we are pretty ahead and Cornell can, you know, plan everything ahead. But when we're talking about, you know, backup, we should thinking about the time where we actually need police presence, or not even police presence, let's say authority presence on campus. So that's just my information.
Okay. Does anyone want to respond to that?
Y'all are bringing up a lot of hypotheticals, which like are really like in reality, like how many of these things have actually happened? In that situation, is IPD even the most helpful resource? Like, no, I'd rather have EMTs here, right? Like, than IPD. A lot of these hypotheticals, when you look at like what actually has been happening, it seems like hypotheticals have become more important than the actual violence that IPD has been committing against like students here, right? Like, there were students at that protest. And like Cornell has said nothing like condemning the actions of IPD. I don't think these hypotheticals are helpful.
If I may also respond to Johan's question, I like do appreciate the concerns that we're hearing about the need to have like an alternative plan in place. I want to go back to what Tomasa said in the past, that these things do already exist. So Johan, to answer your hypothetical about a mass casualty incident, which hopefully will never happen on Cornell's campus. I don't think I've ever heard of one happening. And if you know of something happening, please inform authorities. I would like to say that the Cornell EMS actually already has a mass casualty incident unit in place. And they have been practicing large scale emergency response for, you know, years. I think they started in place in 2007. They're still active to, you know, this day. So again, we do have this alternative thing in place. You know, if we do need support on campus, Cornell EMS is literally, you know, they're already here, they're practicing, they're here to support us. So thank you for your question, Johan.
Thank you guys. And last person on the speakers list is Claire.
I just wanted to hear more about how cutting ties with IPD would place more pressure for police reform efforts. I heard things about this were mentioned by the sponsors. I just want to hear more. And so either it's negatively or positively. I don't know.
Sure. Do any of the other sponsors want to respond? I can go. So I'd like to cite another example that we've seen coming from, I think it's the University of Minnesota. So this was over the summer. If you guys have heard of George Floyd and his murder at the hands of the police department, what the school was able to do was that they actually, the student body president, she called for the university to sever all ties with their local police department, which the university actually did, which brought, you know, great national attention to that specific police department and instilled really severe reform and changes to that, to the Minneapolis Police Department. So that is something that we are modeling, because I think it's really great to look at best practices from other schools. So for instance, this is an example we've seen has worked at other schools. Obviously there is the idea that if Cornell does, dissolve relationships, that will apply pressure to, you know, implement change. Also Cornell is like extraordinarily, also Northwestern University. So again, you know, best practices at other schools. Also, Cornell is like enormously powerful within Cumberland County. We are a huge employer. We have a lot of influence. Our mayor of Ithaca is a Cornell alum. So I think we just want to recognize that Cornell does have influence here and should be using its power and leverage to push for change and reform within the police department. So thank you for your question, Claire.
Thank you. And with that, seeing that we have no other people on the speakers list, if there are no more amendments to be made to this resolution, I'm going to ask.
Yeah, I actually wanted to make some short amendments. First amendment was to add Salam's name. She's one of the co-sponsors. I just accidentally left her name out. So motion to add Salam's name as one of the co-sponsors of this resolution.
Second.
And then can you guys just vote in the participants window, please? Yes, no, and if you're abstaining, please message me. Also, if you're proxy voting for someone, message me as well. And we're in a closed
vote. Is that, what are we voting for now?
Adding Salam's name on as a co-sponsor.
Thank you.
Okay, so by a vote of 24, or 25 to 0 to 1, this passes, this amendment.
Second amendment, I wanted to add, it's really small, but adding an accent to the A in Tomas's name. It's also my bad. I forgot to add the accent. So I want to add that as well. And then I think that is pretty... Just to
clarify, we're not in voting yet, so don't be checking things. In the participants. Okay. Yeah, and can someone second Uche's motion?
Second.
Second.
Any dissent? And seeing no dissent, we're going to move into voting. So please click yes. Also, if you are proxy voting, please message me. And if you're not voting, it's going to be counted as an abstention. So by a vote of 21 to 0 to... This amendment passes. Any other ones?
Yes, and then the last one, it's not an amendment, but I wanted to motion to make this a roll call vote.
Okay, can I
did.
Is there any dissent?
Could I ask a procedural question? What would that mean?
Yeah, so a roll call vote is when we will have the clerk read out everybody's name in alphabetical order, and they will have to state their vote through the microphone. So it goes on record how you voted. So there's a second. Any dissent? And without the dissent, we're going to go to vote on this motion. So if you guys approve of the motion, click yes. If not, click no. Otherwise, message me if you have an abstention.
Wait, to clarify, this is a vote on whether to do the roll call vote?
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, so this is a vote on whether or not we should do a roll call vote.
Wait, why is there a vote to vote? Was there dissent?
No, this is a vote on whether or not we do a roll call.
Oh, because roll call needs a vote, right? Is it simple majority or two-thirds?
I believe it's two-thirds. I don't think our parliamentarian's here today.
He's not.
Oh, okay. All right, maybe I'll just try and find it in the standing rules. All right.
Yeah, I think we'll cross that. So.
And to clarify, the vote for the roll call vote is what are we voting for in the roll call vote?
The resolution.
The resolution itself right now?
No. So we're voting on whether or not we should vote on this resolution by roll call.
Okay. Yes, but the vote on the roll call is for the resolution, right? Okay.
Yes. That's the only resolution we've discussed today. So yes. Okay. So I'm going to close voting soon. Samuel, if you're voting for proxy for Carlo, you have to message me with what his vote is going to be.
Yeah. Okay. No problem.
So, by a vote of
aren't we supposed to vote in the chat right now?
You vote in the participants window like we normally do, the yes, no, and then if you want to abstain, you just message me privately. So by a vote of 18 to 1, or I guess it's 19 to 1, okay. Please don't keep moving your votes around. It makes it really hard to count them. So I guess the final vote is going to be 19 to 0 to, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 abstentions. And so yeah, it does pass by a vote of 19 to 0 to 7. And with that, I'm going to ask for a motion to vote on the resolution.
Motion to vote on the resolution.
Second.
Second. Okay, and then now we're going to have our clerk read out everybody's name in alphabetical order. And then when your name is called, please state your vote into the microphone.
Lila Abed El-Majid.
Yes.
Dylan Ondicat.
No.
Morgan Baker.
No.
Genevieve Bansaw.
Yeah.
Katrina Bentley.
Speaking for Katarina, yes.
Uchenna Chukwukov.
Yes.
Lucy Contreras.
Yes.
Annette Gleiberman.
No.
Sonu Kapoor.
Yes.
Andrea Miramente Serrano.
Yes.
Evan Moy.
No.
Estefania Perez.
Yes.
Tomas Robin.
Yes.
Kate Santa Cruz.
Yes.
Mardia Chardot.
Yes.
Lucas Smith.
Yes.
Claire Templeman.
No.
Valeria Valencia.
Yes.
Noah Watson.
I'm chairing, so I'm
abstaining. Oh, sorry. Solam Woldai.
Yes.
Valentina Shu.
We can come back to her.
Okay. Johan Yuan.
No.
Raquel Zohair.
Yes.
Lucas Zumpano.
It's Zumpano and no.
Zumpano.
Thank you.
Samuel Zebrebrez.
Yes.
Catherine Wong.
Yes. And by the way, Valentina isn't present, so her vote.
And then did we get Carlos's vote?
I messaged it to you.
Yeah, I'm just checking with the clerk.
Okay.
I did not call his name out, but
okay. Yeah, Carlos was a no. So so I have on my end, by a vote of 17-8-1, the resolution passes.
Okay.
So congratulations to the co-sponsors. Thank you for all your work. And thank you to everybody who asked questions. And with that, Kat, I'm going to hand it back off to you. Sure.
Thank you, Noah, for chairing. Quick reminder, just because we have the Office of Assemblies here, just a reminder that, like, the chat, it is not public record, so it technically shouldn't be used for additional commentary that you wouldn't be saying out loud or in person. Just technicalities, I'm sorry. Otherwise, that we will have to shut down the chat. Not that we want to, but just because of due to the technicalities of we need to keep things in public record. Just a reminder for all of you. I see a few hands. I'm going to take a pause. I know some people have to go because they have commitments at 6 p.m. You should have messaged Layla if you do have to leave early from this meeting so that you, like, you can, we can excuse your absences. I have two hands. I'm going to assume these are, okay, I'm just going to move ahead with the speakers list, Mardia.
So I really appreciated the discussion we had today. I would just like to point out how important it is to maintain civility, not just in the chat, but when speaking to each other, just to make sure we're fostering discussion and having people speak their minds. Of course, this is, it's contingent on people speaking in a way that doesn't harm other people. But if people are speaking and they're just asking questions and looking for more information, I think we really should just answer their questions and try to maintain an aura of civility and just respect. It is difficult because this is a heated discussion, and I really appreciate everyone who voted yes, of course, but just to maintain civility and to have people, to encourage people to speak out. Thank you.
Thank you, Mardia. I really appreciate that as well. I have another hand from Mariah. Go ahead, Mariah.
Yeah, well, I guess now I'll respond to that. Yeah, I don't play into respectability politics. I don't believe in respectability politics. I am a supporter of cancel culture. I will cancel people in the chat. Well, I guess I shouldn't be using the chat, but that was actually my second point was, is there a reason that we can't just make the chat part of the public record? Like, can that just be part of it instead of us not being able to use the chat? Because I think that the chat has been pretty useful, and I think that I don't know. I personally have found it to be a good place for people's comments to be shared. And I actually think it's something that we should continue even when the essay is in person. Like, I actually think that the chat is like a really useful tool.
Thanks, Mariah. I'm just going to defer to what I've heard from the Office Assemblies that it's just not part of the public record. So I don't think the chat is like downloaded and put in our minutes. I think if we want to change that, maybe we'll have to have some kind of action to ask for that. But just because it's not part of the public record, that it's not technically supposed to be used right now. I hope that answers your question. And if we have to
not really. Well, that's, I understand that it's not part of the public record now, but I'm asking, like, can it be part of the public record / how do we go about that? Like, I understand what you're saying for like this meeting specifically, but moving forward, like, how can we make the chat part of the public record?
Sure. Gina raised her hand.
Oh, okay. Thank you. There's a hand. Oh, okay. Gina, please.
Thank you. I think certainly it's up to the assembly to determine how to incorporate chat if you decide to do that. In addition to the public record, it also goes out of order. Typically, the chair has to call on anybody who is going to be participating in the debate or the discussion. And the chat forum is, you wouldn't be having those sidebar conversations if you were gathered at a meeting. And that's another distinction. So we want to be sure that we're capturing the discussion as moderated by the chair or the president of the assembly, and also make sure that all of those debates are captured for the public record. Thank you.
Thank you, Gina. Out of respect for people's time, I know we're approaching almost the end of the meeting. It's 6 o'clock. Our meeting is scheduled to end at 6:30, and we do have two resolutions and a presentation left on our agenda. I'm going to move ahead. Colin, I'd love to introduce you and your presentation. For folks who are unfamiliar, Colin is a former member of the Assembly. He previously served as our Vice President of Diversity and Inclusion last year, as well as a minority student representative. He also served as the co-chair of Native American and Indigenous Students at Cornell, and we're super happy to have him here presenting for us today. Colin, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Sorry, I'm just trying to figure out how to share my screen.
I just enabled it.
Okay. Wow, that was brutal to sit through. You know, it's funny, on the email that got sent out earlier today, I didn't know that there was resolution 9 on there, else I probably would have went first. But thank you to the co-sponsors of that. That's super important work. And, you know, I was super disappointed by the dialogue that took place and reminded me why I'm not in the SA anymore. So thanks for that. Anyways, hello, everyone. My name is Colin Benedict. Thanks for the intro, Kat. I'm Mohawk from Akwesasne, which is a reservation located in northern New York, and the current external relations chair for Native American and Indigenous students at Cornell. So I gave this presentation last year at the essay orientation when I was VP of Diversity and Inclusion. Since then, it's kind of evolved a bit. And as you all know, there are two resolutions accompanying it today. So for those of you who sat through it last year, it's changed a little bit. For people who attended the teach-in last night, that was sponsored by NASAC. Even from then, it's evolved a little bit. So just bear with me, and I'll try to get through this as quickly as possible. So basically what I'm going to be talking about today is the history of Cornell University as it relates to Indigenous dispossession and genocide. Because there's a long history there that the university has yet to publicly acknowledge, specifically with ties between the endowments, the Morrill Act, which established Cornell University as a land grant institution, and various acts of Indigenous dispossession that took place, not only in New York State, but in 14 other states as well. So these are just some of the objectives. I'm going to go over a brief historical overview of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy and the Cayuga Nation, introduce the historical context by which the Cayuga Nation, who is the nation of indigenous peoples who traditionally inhabited the Ithaca area, were displaced, provide an overview of how the endowment and Cornell University is tied to this violent history, and then go into the resolutions. Introduction to Haudenosaunee history. So the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, you'll often hear to us referred to as the Iroquois Confederacy in history books, or just as the Iroquois. We normally don't like that term because it's kind of a slur that French colonizers gave to us at the time. So Haudenosaunee means people of the longhouse, because that's what we lived in. And the Confederacy makes up the six indigenous nations that historically occupied and still to this day occupy what is currently known as New York State. Their territory also stretched into southern Canada, into the provinces of Ontario and Quebec, as well as to the south of New York as well. So a quick rundown on the history of the Confederacy. So historians argue about like whether this was like 3,000 years ago or 800 years ago, like the times vary. But some time ago, the nations of the Confederacy, the Seneca, the Onondaga, the Oneida, the Mohawk, the Cayuga, the original five nations, were constantly at war with one another. And then it got to the point where they realized that if this were to continue, that they would destroy themselves, essentially. And there was a leader who arose, known as the Peacemaker, who went around to each of the nations spreading what's called the Gaya Nalekgoa, which is the Great Law of Peace, which basically led to a cease in fighting and to the creation of the longest standing democratic government on this continent. The Gaya Nalekgoa, the Great Law of Peace, it's influenced many historical constitutions and governance structures, specifically the one specific example that comes to mind is the Articles of Confederation. Thinking back to US history in high school, the first attempt that the United States made at forming a permanent governance structure for itself was through the Articles of Confederation, which was largely authored by Ben Franklin, who pulled a lot of the governance structure and principles from basically just watching the Haudenosaunee Confederacy and you know, how well that we had been able to establish ourselves and establish our governance system. Of course, white people tend to mess stuff up, so that wasn't able to work out for them. Anyways, later, the Tuscarora Nation, which is the sixth nation, so you often hear to us referred to as the Six Nations, joined the Confederacy in 1722. And yeah, that's a quick rundown on the basic history. getting into the specifics of the Ithaca area, so the Cayuga Nation, the Gayagono, as they're known in their own language, historically occupied and to this day occupied the land that is the Ithaca area, as well as other lands throughout the Finger Lakes. So just going more into the structure of Haudenosaunee governance. So within the Six Nations, there are clans that basically your clan is like your family within the Confederacy. And, you know, no matter like which nation you're from, if you're the same clan as someone else from another nation, then you guys are basically relatives. That's how that's determined. Clans are passed down by Haudenosaunee mothers. So for example, my mother was Wolf Clan, my dad was Turtle Clan, so I'm Wolf Clan. The Cayuga Nation has five separate clans: Bear, Heron, Snipe, Turtle, and Wolf. We're a very matrilineal society, which is super ironic and also impacted several different suffrage movements in the United States, specifically the Seneca Falls Convention that took place in New York with, Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton and all those people. One of the reasons why it was held in New York State was because American women who were campaigning for suffrage at the time basically saw all of these Native women who had all this power and all this responsibility and society and had that power since the Gayano at Goa and the formation of the Confederacy, and we're like, hey, let's go see what they're doing, that might be cool. While at the same time they were pursuing like acts of genocide against like several other indigenous nations. So the extractive nature of American history is just like so pervading that it really, I don't want to say it surprises me at this point, but something like that. So matrilineal societies, within each of the clans, there are clan mothers, which are hereditary titles. So the clan mothers basically dictate who serves as sachems or chiefs from each of the nations. So there are 50 sachems or chiefs that sit on the Grand Council of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, is still in existence today. And if you want to serve as a chief, basically you have to be approved by a clan mother. So getting into specifically how the Cayuga Nation was displaced from the Ithaca area, that brings us up a few years to the Sullivan-Clinton campaign. So during the Revolutionary War period in 1778, there were a series of raids that were carried out by American loyalists, as well as a couple of different nations from the Haudenosaunee Confederacy against the American Revolutionary Army. So this basically crippled the Continental Army because it blocked off trade routes that were crucial for moving supplies throughout the states of New England. So in response to that, George Washington, the first president of the United States, basically ordered a attempted act of genocide against the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, despite the fact that there were Haudenosaunee warriors fighting on the side of the American Continental Army. So basically how it went down is that the Confederacy was split between whether to support the British or the Americans in the Revolutionary War. But Washington was just like, you know what, we're just going to try to wipe them all out. And he did that by ordering General Sullivan and General Clinton to take a pretty sizable chunk of the Revolutionary Army at that time, around 5,000 soldiers, to enact a scorched earth policy, which, going back to history class, is basically kill everyone you come across, burn their villages to the ground, burn their fields, and completely eradicate their presence on that land. So that happened, and despite their neutral status, the Cayuga Nation was targeted by this campaign that took place in 1779. However, as the campaign was taking place, they were actually using Haudenosaunee scouts to guide the campaign through central New York. So these scouts realized what was going on. They went ahead, warned the villages that, you know, all of these soldiers were coming to wipe them out. So a lot of the villages were able to evacuate. However, there were dozens of villages and fields that were burned to the ground. A lot of the infrastructure that had been in place for hundreds of years in the area was just completely destroyed. And a lot of the loss of life came as a result of exposure and starvation after the fact. So that is basically how Cornell land was cleared of the Gayagono people. So after that happened in the post-Revolutionary War period, the lands across New York State was parceled off and given to Revolutionary War veterans, because basically at the time the United States didn't have the financial means to compensate them for their service. So moving forward a couple of years, you have the Treaty of Canandaigua, which took place in November 1794, which was basically a treaty entered into by the United States and the majority of the nations of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy that was supposed to lay out the relationship between the U.S. and the Confederacy moving forward until the end of time. So this treaty was supposed to affirm the Cuban Nation's rights to 64,000 acres of their sovereign territory in the Finger Lakes. However, this land was never returned to the Cuban Nation. There is an event coming up on November 11th. It's Canandaigua Treaty Day. It takes place in Canandaigua, New York. I'm not sure if they're having it this year, but you know, next year maybe. If you guys get a chance, I definitely recommend making a trip out there. It's a really awesome event, and they always have good food and good speakers, and it's just an event that's supposed to commemorate the treaty and strengthen the relationship between the United States and the Confederacy. The aftermath of the Canandaigua Treaty, the Cuban Nation was still unsuccessful in securing a land base for themselves in basically every level of the United States court. So beginning in the 21st century, they just simply began buying back territory in the Finger Lakes. So what does this mean in terms of Cornell? Where does Cornell fit into all of this? So you often hear of Cornell University referred to as the land grant institution. You know, that's the big thing that like you see advertised everywhere. You know, when students come to campus, people are showing them around. They're like, oh yeah, we have three land grant colleges and like you get reduced tuition, like all this stuff. But no one actually knows what that means or really cares on Cornell's campus. So basically what established Cornell University as a land grant institution was the Morrill Land Grant Act of 1862, which established a land grant institution for each state of the United States at the time and basically paid them in land equal to 30,000 acres of federal lands for each congressman at the time that state had. So Cornell University was selected as the land grant institution for New York because we had a lot of Congress people at the time. The university received almost 1 million acres of land to go towards funding the endowment of the university as we know it today. So there's an interesting caveat that comes with this because in the Morrill Act, there was a military training requirement that was required of all the institutions, which is where you get the ROTC program at Cornell, actually, is basically based out of this. And, you know, this is definitely a topic that needs to be researched more. But essentially, what needs to be examined is the ties between the Indian Wars that were taking place at the time, because the United States was engaged several fronts in attempting to either wipe out or displace different indigenous nations across the Western United States at the time that the Morrill Land Grant Act was put into practice. So definitely looking at the connection between this military training requirements and ongoing conflicts that the United States had with indigenous people at the time is hopefully something the university will look into later on. Another interesting caveat of this act, you know, I'll just get into that later. So continuing on in the context of Cornell's founding, because New York State didn't have any available lands within its borders, because all of the land had been parceled off to Revolutionary War veterans and there were no available federal lands for sale, Cornell University was instead issued scrip, which think of it as like an IOU or receipt for almost 1 million acres of land in other states. So yeah, that's basically what that means. So Ezra Cornell, John McGraw, and several other famous founders of the university, like Andrew Dixon White, they all have buildings named after them now, which, you know, I'll get into in a bit. But they took the scrip that they received from the federal government and they selected lands in 14 other states besides New York. One of the biggest ones was large tracts of territory in Wisconsin. John McGraw was a timber baron and he scoped out these forests in Wisconsin that he thought would be profitable for the university. These forests were taken under duress from the Ojibwe and Menominee, as well as surrounding tribes in the area. So basically, what does that mean? It means that the Cuban Nation definitely weren't the only victims of the growth of Cornell University on its way to becoming the institution that we know it today. So after these lands were selected in not only Wisconsin, but 13 other states as well, instead of just immediately turning around and selling it, like a lot of other land grant institutions did at the time because they needed money, Ezra Cornell decided to sit on it like an investment and let it accrue value. And then the university started to sell it off slowly over time, parcel by parcel. So by 1914, even though the university had only received about 1/10 of the total lands granted by the Moore Land Grant Act, it had received approximately, 4.5 times as much money as the second most profitable institution, which was Montana State. So by 1914, it brought in approximately $5.7 million from the sale of the Moore Land Grant Act land, which in 2020 dollars is approximately $148 million. So the sale of this territory was really crucial in establishing the endowment of Cornell University as we know it today. More information about this topic can be found on the American Indian and Indigenous Studies Program website here at Cornell. They recently published a blog at the start of the semester that specifically looks into the connections between the Morrill Act and how Cornell's ties with that have harmed Indigenous communities, not just in New York, but across the United States. So this graphic basically maps out how much Cornell University profited from acts of Indigenous dispossession and genocide. As you can see, they profited the most out of any other institution of higher education in the United States. To the lower right-hand side of the screen, you'll see a breakdown of the number of parcels that the university had, 6,716, the total acreage, which was acquired from 63 treaties, cessations, or seizures in 15 different states. So, yeah, do with that as you will. So, I mean, what does this mean as far as, you know, us currently being in this space, occupying territory, occupying space in the Ithaca area, when there's this history of trauma and violence and, you know, attempted acts of genocide that were pursued, you know, not only by the United States government before it even was a government, but also by the founders of Cornell University, through the support of the Morrill Act, through the selection of land that was occupied by indigenous peoples that led to their displacement in Wisconsin, as well as 13 other states. So essentially where we're at right now is that we're trying to increase recognition of this history that Cornell University has. We're trying to really push forward a new narrative of that history and increase recognition of the Gayaogono's nation, the Gayaogono people's claim to the territory in the Ithaca area, as well as the Finger Lakes area. And while this is all like super depressing, there have been various, I guess, achievements over the past couple of years. For example, with Martha Pollack's inauguration in 2017, there was a land acknowledgement of the Cuyahoga Nation given before the event. And in the fall semester of 2019, that marked the first time that a Cuyahoga language course was offered at Cornell, which was the result of literally almost over a decade of advocacy by professors in the American Indian and Indigenous Studies program who were fighting to bring a Cuyahoga language course to the university. I was able to take that course in last semester, actually. Definitely recommend it if you have space in your schedule. It's taught by a faith keeper from the Cuyahoga Nation named Steve Henhock. He's a really amazing guy. We hope that these smaller steps indicate a potential shift towards a more respectful and reconciliatory relationship, not only between Cornell University and the Cuyahoga Nation, but Cornell University and the probably, I don't want to say hundreds, but dozens of other Indigenous nations that were displaced by the Morrill Act and by the university, whose land went towards funding the university endowment as we know it today. So that's basically the end of the presentation that I gave last year. This gets into more of the resolutions that were submitted to you guys today. I laid out the demands here because, you know, for all you people who didn't read the resolutions, it basically, Resolution 7 called for you guys to support the demands that were put out by Native American and Indigenous students at Cornell. So these are the demands, and I'm going to go over them with you guys because you probably didn't read. So number one, you have the AISP will transfer to department status within the next 4 years. So that's extremely crucial as far as really ensuring that the Indigenous Studies program, we know it today, continues to flourish in the future. So in order to make that happen, because that's really the main goal of these demands, we need to increase funding granted to the American Indian and Indigenous Studies program for the recruitment and retention of new Indigenous faculty. We're calling for a minimum of 5 new faculty to be hired within the next 4 years, because as it stands, there's only about 4 or 5 faculty who identify as Indigenous spread throughout Cornell's colleges. So that's definitely not near enough, and we definitely want to see an increase in recruitment. Number three, we also want to see an increase in recruitment of Indigenous students, not only Native American / Alaska Native, but Hawaiian students as well, and other Pacific Islander, because in 2017, there are only 67 of us spread throughout the university. That's undergraduate and graduate in all fields of study. So we're calling for that to be increased to 1.7% of the total Cornell population, which would be in the 250 to 300 range, if I remember correctly. So In order to support and basically in order to make this happen, we're also calling for an additional staff member to be hired by the Indigenous Studies Program to separate the duties of recruitment and retention. Because as it stands right now, we have one absolutely amazing person, Wavell Waterman Lyons, who's the student support specialist currently. However, she has a really, I don't want to say impossible task, but pretty close because she's in charge of recruitment to hundreds of Indigenous communities spread throughout the United States and beyond. So we want to separate the duties of retention efforts on campus and recruitment efforts off campus to ensure that we can bring more students in, as well as increase retention rates of Indigenous students once they get here. Specifically, we want the recruitment efforts to focus on Indigenous communities who were affected by the Moore Land Grant Act. And we're also calling for any student who comes from a community that was historically displaced by the act to receive a free education regardless of field of study. Number four, to specifically address the unique mental health concerns and struggles that affect Indigenous students, staff, and faculty, we're calling for an additional Indigenous therapist to be hired by Cornell Health. Well, the numbers are off there. Anyways, five. We're calling for the university to institute a land acknowledgement of the Gragagono people before all Ithaca-based affiliated events. This land acknowledgement used will be the AISP approved version. So this ties into resolution eight. The university shall also put out a statement acknowledging the amount of land acquired, interest accrued, and mineral rights received through the Moore Land Grant Act, and thus through Indigenous dispossession and acts of genocide. So basically what this means is that the university divested from all of its physical land holdings by 1935 because, no, it was 1934, which is also a super interesting caveat in the university's history, because the Indian Reorganization Act took place in 1935 and basically established a tribal council or a tribal government for each of the Indigenous nations spread throughout the United States. So it's super interesting that the university basically was like, we're going to sell all our land before the United States recognizes the governance structures of Indigenous people. Anyways, while they divested from all their physical land holdings, the university still owns a lot of the mineral rights to these lands spread throughout Wisconsin and 14 other states. So for example, if a gold mine was to be discovered in Wisconsin and the university owned the rights to the minerals there, you know, that would be obviously a huge source of income for the university. But, you know, because that land was cleared through acts of colonial violence, attempted genocide, and Indigenous dispossession, we're calling for the university to refrain from mineral and resource extraction on those lands. Number seven, the university shall return all lands in the Ithaca area not immediately utilized for educational purposes to the traditional Gayagono leadership. So that's just basically our land back demand, which a lot of you might not understand, but that is basically to support the Cayuga Nation as they seek to reestablish a land base for themselves in the Ithaca area, which they've struggled to do for 250 years now because of the inherently oppressive governance structure that is the United States. And yeah, so basically, I've got a couple of questions. I've received a couple of questions about this specific demand as far as like, oh, what lands will like Cornell have to give up and stuff like that. And it's like, it's funny because I imagine you guys are thinking of like, oh, they're going to come in and move out on the Ag Quad or something like that, which, you know, would not be the case because Cornell University owns hundreds of acres of land in the Ithaca area that's just forest that they actively invites dozens of hunters not affiliated with Cornell to come onto their territory and hunt deer each year. So basically any of the forest lands that Cornell is not utilizing for educational purposes would suffice for this.
Hi. really quickly, just because it is 6:30, as chair, I'm going to ask for a motion to extend the meeting time by 15 minutes. Is there a motion?
Motion to vote.
Second.
Thank you. Okay, second. Great. Any dissent? Okay, all in favor, just go ahead and click yes in the chat. Again, 15 minutes. And if we have to extend it again, we will. I just understand people have to go, but I also want to be extremely respectful to Colin and his presentation. So, and again, if you can't stay, you can like leave, but we really do ask people to stay so we maintain quorum. Okay, this motion passes. Thank you, everyone. Colin, sorry. Thanks.
Thanks, guys. I'll try to wrap this up. I'm almost to the end here. Yeah, number 8, to ensure that all students have a basic understanding of the gravity of Indigenous genocide and their positionality on stolen land, we're mandating that all students take an introductory Indigenous studies course during their first year of study. So I've gotten some more questions about this. And basically, the thing with this point is that Indigenous studies is so inherently intersectional that it literally touches every academic field of study that you can possibly be in. It literally encompasses like academics in general, because wherever you're conducting research, you're on someone's Indigenous territory. And, you know, it's up to you as an academic who wants to ethically conduct research on that territory to figure out whose territory it is, where those people are at now, and, you know, incorporate them into the research process and learn the best way to conduct this research in that space that isn't also furthering colonial violence and dispossession. So just by that alone, Indigenous studies touches every other area of study. I can talk more about that later. There'll probably be some questions that come up. But number 9, which has also been a point of contention, which is really funny to me because this is like one of the smaller asks, is that the university renames Morrill Hall on the Arts Quad. Because really the point of this specific demand is to, what we're trying to do is create a space where people can be educated about this history of violence that took place and, you know, be able to ask questions in a safe space and think critically about these issues and all this different stuff, and learn about this stuff without glorifying the people who like were purveyors of colonial violence at the time. So that's basically what this demand is calling for. Number 10, the Ad Hoc Committee on Native American Affairs will be reinstituted to oversee the approval of these demands. So that has a little bit of a historical aspect to it, because when the American Indian and Indigenous Studies Program at Cornell was founded in 1983, a huge contributor to its founding was the Ad Hoc Committee on Native American Affairs, which was established about 6 years earlier. Wow, I can't do math. Never mind. That's like 8 years earlier. Whatever, 1975. That's when it was established. And that committee really played a super important role in establishing the Indigenous Studies Program at Cornell, because it kept open channels of communication between the university administration, Indigenous students, staff and faculty, as well as community members at the time. So we're calling for the reinstitution of that committee to ensure that each of these demands are met in a timely fashion. We currently, NAISAC has been circulating a petition for the last 2 weeks that currently has gathered over 850 signatures. It has also been sponsored by the 22 student organizations that you see here, which I like to think make up a pretty decent chunk of the student body. We have all 5 Alana organizations here, as well as various other social justice oriented organizations. So, you know, as far as you guys being worried about what do your constituencies think, take a look at this. These are also listed on the resolution, but I doubt you guys read it. Anyways, so the petition itself gathered 868 total signatures, 395 undergrad, 111 graduates, 35 faculty, 26 staff, 124 alumni, and 177 community members. That's basically all I've got right now. You have the resolutions in front of you, resolutions 7 and 8. 7 is calling for you guys to support these demands, and 8 is calling for you guys to institute a line acknowledgement of the Gayatgono people and recite it before all student assembly affiliated events on campus. So any questions?
Okay, I see one hand, and I'm going to allow Andy to ask your question. Floor is yours.
Hi, first of all, I want to thank Colin for coming to present here today. I think this is a vital thing that needs to be happening right now, and I appreciate you bringing this up. I have one question, and it is about line 123. It's about demand number 8 in the list of demands you put forward. And this is personally the only reason why I'm not exactly sure if I'm comfortable voting for this. As an engineer, I had to take 22 credits, not including like gym or anything like that, my freshman fall, and then 19 credits my freshman spring. As an engineer, there's just like a lot of courses you need to get through your first year. And so I, unless like Cornell would somehow change like the engineering curriculum, I would not have been able to fit another schedule in my class. So that is my only big concern with both these resolutions. I think they're phenomenal. That's just the personally, like, I just don't know how that would be possible, nor would I want to necessarily be, nor would I think I would have been able to, like, handle that mentally.
Yeah, thank you for that. Yeah, I definitely understand with the academic workload that's put on Cornell students, we're always under a lot of stress and stuff like that. I do think that this is super important as far as educating the broader Cornell community and really dialing down the levels of ignorance that are present on campus and that I've seen present here at this meeting. As far as the specific wording of that demand, what we were thinking with that is we kind of really wanted to come out strong. We don't really expect that that's actually going to happen when we sit down with the university administration. But as far as concessions to that, I can share those with you if it makes you more comfortable in approving it, because we didn't want to lead with the concessions, obviously, because like that's not how negotiating works. So that's why that is worded the way it is. But we're just hoping to institute some sort of educational program. It might not have to be a class. It might not have to be in the first semester of people's freshman year. Just sometime throughout their time at Cornell where they can be educated about these issues.
I think that's a great initiative. I want to learn more about it, like whether it's an online module. It's just not something that like I could take a class on my freshman year, but I think whether it's an online module, I think that is a great type of initiative. I want to learn more about
it. Great. Thank you so much, Annie and Colin, for your response. It's 6:40, so we have 5 minutes left in our extended meeting time. Tomas, do you still want to be on the speakers list?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I think, it goes back to we have come up with proposals and it's the university's job to figure out how to implement them. So Colin and NASAC fully like support y'all in everything, and I hope you actually do get the class because you guys deserve it. And it's one of those things where if engineers need to take, like, it is the job of the engineering school to make this course a priority over whichever calculus class you're supposed to take that semester, because at the end of the day, like, this land was indigenous land first, and that should come before that, because you can take that math class another semester, right? Like, it's about, like, if they need to shift the requirements, they should, and that should be a priority over allowing them to keep the status quo, because it's more difficult to shift requirements, because requirements can be rewritten just like the Arts and Sciences College rewrote requirements last year. I think we should do a motion to vote.
Second.
Okay. Okay.
Wait, can I make a motion, or is that
Tomas, you withdraw your motion to vote first.
Sure, withdraw motion.
Thank you.
Motion to make this a roll call vote.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Yeah. I would actually propose that we vote it another day. I would feel more comfortable reading over this resolution as there are many points in it.
Wait, can you repeat what you just said? I didn't hear you.
Yeah, sorry. I would actually propose to postpone the vote. If that's possible, I feel like there's a lot of resolutions I would really like to go over.
Okay, so just to clarify, so you're dissenting to the motion to vote, which means we're going to have to vote on whether to vote because you're proposing to table rather than right now we're going to have to vote on whether or not we should vote today or follow your suggestion and vote next week. So I'm going to ask for a vote to vote. Please vote in the chat whether or not, if you vote yes, this means you agree that we should vote on it today as a roll call vote. If you vote no, this means that you believe we should vote on it another day.
Can I say something before y'all vote on this?
Sure.
Yeah, honestly, there is a lot here. So if y'all don't feel super comfortable voting on it specifically now, because you guys have been hit with a lot today, I would feel comfortable coming back next week and answering any additional questions.
Okay, thank you. Okay, can everyone finish voting in the chat, please? Okay, 12 to 4 to 2, this motion passes, which means we will be doing a roll call vote today. But again, if you have further questions after this, Colin has expressed that he'll be here at future meetings to answer any questions if you have remaining ones after this resolution. Awesome. Thank you all. So now that we have voted to vote, we're going to move into the actual vote. Is there a motion to move into voting?
Motion to vote.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any dissent? Cool. No dissent. Go ahead and please vote in the... Oh, wait. We're going to do roll call. Sorry. Kiara, are you still here?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Awesome. Thank you.
So should I just read off... those that are still here?
Yes, please. And then I'm going to vote for Layla. Just Layla, actually. Actually, she's here. Is she?
Do we have quorum?
We do have quorum. I just checked, actually. We have, I think, is it 17 members present? 16? But that is quorum because we have 28 members, I think. Okay. Great.
I'm going off the participants list and it's not in alphabetical order. No, is that okay?
Everyone ready to say your vote.
Quick question before we start. I'm proxy voting for Stefania. Do I say her vote or just message it to Kat or Noah?
When you say your vote, can you also state Stefania's vote? Just because I don't think she'll be called on.
Yeah.
Okay. Genevieve Bensaw.
Yeah.
Andrea Miramentes Serrano.
Yes.
Claire Templeman.
Yes.
Katarina Bentley.
Voting for Katarina because her mic doesn't work. Yes.
Kate Santa Cruz.
Yes.
Layla Abed El Majid.
Yes.
Lucas Smith.
Yes.
Lucy Contreras.
Yes for me and yes for Stefania.
Morgan Baker.
Yes.
Raquel Zohair.
Yes.
Salam Woldai.
Yes.
Tomas Running.
Yes.
Uche Chukwokev.
Yes.
Valeria Valencia.
Yes.
Johan Yuan.
Yes.
Annette Gleiberman.
Yes.
Noel Watson.
Yes.
Okay. I think that's it.
Okay, great. What was that vote count?
Was that 17-0 to 1?
Yeah, I think so.
Let me do a really quick count just to make sure.
Okay.
Okay, perfect. 17-0 to 1. Colin, your resolution passes. Congratulations. Okay, great. Do we have any questions right now?
Oh, I have a question about the second resolution that Colin proposed. Are we going to vote on that now?
I'm going to ask for another motion to extend just for like 5 minutes, okay? Is that okay?
Second.
Okay. Great. All in favor, please vote yes. Again, 5 minutes. Okay, great. Okay, this motion passes. We're going to move into discussion of the next resolution, unless there is a motion to vote.
Motion to vote by roll call.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, thank you, Morgan. Great. Okay, we're going to vote on whether... Actually, is there any dissent? Okay, perfect. Now we can actually move into voting. Okay, great. All in favor of this resolution. I guess we're gonna start again with the roll call, Kira.
Okay. Andrea Miramentes Serrano.
Yeah.
Claire Templeman.
Yes.
Katarina Bentley.
Yes.
Kate Santa Cruz.
Yes.
Layla Abed Al-Jameed.
Yes. Also voting, proxy voting for Samuel Zverev, yes.
Lucas Smith.
Yes.
Lucy Contreras.
Yes for me and yes for Stefania.
Morgan Baker.
Yes.
Raquel Zohair.
Yes.
Salam Woldai.
Yes.
Tomas Ravening.
Yes.
Yuchena Chakwakev.
Yes.
Valeria Valencia.
Yes.
Johan Yuan.
Yes.
Annette Gleiberman.
Yes.
Valentina Shu.
Yes.
Noah Watson.
Yes.
I think that's it.
Thank you. So I think that vote count is actually 20-0 to 1. And the last vote count was 18-0 to 1 because I forgot to count Estefania's proxy vote. And then this vote, we had Samuel and Valentina rejoin us. Okay, so 20-0 to 1, this resolution passes. Colin, huge congratulations to you and ASAC. Thank you so much for these resolutions and your presentation. Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, great. It is now 6:51. Thank you all so much for staying through this meeting. I know it's been a little intense. Feel free to reach out to me. I'm going to ask if there is a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Okay, great. All in favor, just unmute yourself and say aye.
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 This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.